Hey guys, I'm Calvin L. Williams, and this is Documenting the Journey. We talk to operations and thought leaders about what are their greatest challenges, what they did to overcome, and what are they most excited about for the future. Join us on this journey and run a better business, create more value, live a better life, and be inspired by the spirit of continuous improvement. I have the honor and the privilege of talking to the one and only, the man from down under, from chaos to calm himself. Paul, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, no, thank you, Calvin. I think the honor and the privilege is all mine.
good.
Really appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
That was my, you know, basketball announcer speech right there. You know, I've been wanting to do that for some time, but you know, you've given me the privilege of doing so. I understand you are a basketball fan yourself. Is that right?
Somewhat. I try and follow the New York Knicks from afar.
Yeah.
So nice to see some success this season.
Good. All right. So, Paul, man, it's so good to catch up with you, man. I'm a big fan of yours, actually. You, 17,000 connections and followers on LinkedIn. Your content, so visual, you know, and it just resonates. I mean, how did you develop such a savvy for social media marketing? You know, where'd that come from? Is that all just trial and error, or were you, you know, trained in some way, or how did that work out?
Definitely not trained in any way. Trial and error. So yeah. I guess at the end of the day, I try and practice what I preach. So there's a lot of PDCA in all of that. So probably the story with the social media stuff is more, probably not by design than anything else. I started doing the social media really, one, just the pictures and things, just to show and share what, you know, can be achieved through practicing lean. So really there's a lot just day-to-day content of what's happening in my clients. And a lot of my clients are starting from the bare bones of lean.
Yeah.
Doing simple things, you know, low cost, no cost. And I just wanted to sort of almost document that. The videos have really been something I enjoy now. I'm a bit of an introvert, or maybe a lot of an introvert.
I would not know that based on what I've seen of you online.
So the videos were just me making myself uncomfortable every day, getting in front of a camera and talking. And so it's been good. So it's a bit of, I guess for me, that was a lot of about personal growth more than anything, but it's also, again, just about sharing my thoughts day to day, my learnings day to day. Every day there's a conversation, there's maybe something I've heard in a podcast or read in a book or whatever it might be that stimulates some sort of a thought and that resonates with me. And just want to share my reflections on it, whatever that is. Generally it's you know, one take. It's never perfect. Fumble words, forget to say the right things, all those sort of things, but I'm cool with that. And
you know, I think I've read some of Gary V's books. I've heard Grant Cardone. These are, you know, marketing sales type guys. And they have this concept of filling up the Grand Canyon with bricks, right? And what that means is, you know, it's like a social media marketing strategy where you know, every piece of content you publish is like a brick, and you're just being consistent and putting out some content. Doesn't have to be perfect, to your point, but just that consistency and people and showing up, your face, your voice, you know, what you've done. And I'll tell you from my side of the pond, looking through my window, which is my computer here, at what you're doing, you've sort of built almost an iconic image and presence on social media, through that consistency, right? And through that just always present way of interacting on social media. So I would certainly say, you know, you've done some really incredible things. So I certainly want to commend you for that. So, and I'm inspired too, right? I'm inspired to be there and be present as well. So good stuff, man.
Thank you, Calvin. Really appreciate that. And you mentioned Gary V. Like, I listened to Gary V a lot, and that he was a really big inspiration, just in terms of just getting out and doing stuff. It doesn't need to be perfect. And
yeah.
maybe to that point, there's a lot of, if we're talking lean, there's a lot of, you know, non-lean people out there that are very lean people, if you will. So there's a lot to be taken out of that. Maybe we can talk about
absolutely
that
later. Yeah. I mean, you know, lean, you know, the concepts from lean, you know, although, trying to think, was it Jim Womack who wrote The Machine That Changed the World and some of the other lean leaders, thought leaders early on. I mean, these concepts are universal, right? It's not, you know, Toyota found them, but they pulled them out of just things they saw working in the world. So it's not a surprise that you got people like that who, you know, maybe not technically lean people who came upon the same truths, right? And apply them well. So good stuff. I'll also say, like, the your approach, right? I'm really I'm a fan of your approach, the visual management approach to sort of getting started with continuous improvement, right? Because you can't solve problems you can't see. So so give me some idea. You know, I got, you know, tell me a little bit about your background, how you came into continuous improvement, and sort of how you came to the realization that visual is where it's at.
Sure. So I fell into continuous improvement. I've been a career in manufacturing, and I fell into manufacturing. So it's again, more sort of luck than design. But yeah, so my manufacturing career, I started on the shop floor in a food manufacturing business in my hometown in Ballarat, in Melbourne, Australia. Funnily enough, it was working for a Japanese company, but I started as a machine operator, and probably similar to many people in manufacturing's journey, became a good machine operator, proficient at what I did, and then progressed through the ranks of leadership, became a team leader and a supervisor, and onward to production management. But I was sort of introduced early on to, you know, the concepts of 5S. And like most people I deal with these days, I was like, you know, what do I need this for? I know where that stuff is. I don't need labels and lines and color codes and all this sort of stuff. But I started to engage with it and started to see the value. And so that was really the first steps. And my boss at the time bought me Gemba Kaizen by Masaaki Imai. And I read that cover to cover, and that sort of lit a fire that really blew my mind in many ways. And I just started practicing. I started just picking the things that I could relate to my current situation and started implementing these things. So started implementing, you know, standards. It was a greenfield site, so there was really not much there. And it was a bit of a blank canvas from that point of view. And I was able to start to bring these things to the workplace, to practice and to learn, and really saw the benefits, you know, using Kanban, using visual management and all of those sort of things. And
I'm curious to know from that experience, like, how did management respond to your, because really that's an entrepreneurial effort you took there, right? You sort of saw what could be, and you decided to take it upon yourself to make a difference. I'm sure, you know, if your experience has been like mine, you probably caught some arrows in the back from moving people's cheese and, you know, doing things differently than what people were used to. How was that experience for you?
Some of it was really positive. Some of it was really difficult. Because, you know, I think ultimately when you're trying to change anything, you're going to encounter roadblocks along the way. Sometimes the roadblocks appear when you least expect them. It can be interesting from that point of view, and that's probably carried through the rest of my career. But yeah, in the most part, I got a lot of support because ultimately those things worked.
Good.
Because they do work. So yeah, I just really from there just self-taught. I read lots of books. Maybe I read too many books, and maybe there's a conversation to be had there. But
yeah,
so then spread my wings to bigger companies. Worked for some national and global businesses. Always in the same sort of role. So always been a functional manager, but implementing continuous improvement to greater or lesser degrees. Pretty much every single one of those businesses had no lean or no continuous improvement methodology. So I was really starting from scratch every single time. So that's really my journey. And I guess came to a point a few years ago where I had an opportunity then to jump into continuous improvement full time. And I've been there for, the last 6 years and running my own business for the last 4.5.
That's fantastic, man. Yeah, I always, I'm an entrepreneur too. So I get the how scary it is sometimes to step off of that safety net. Corporate safety net, or even having, being part of a consultancy, still a bit of a safety net because that paycheck's coming to being, it's all you, right? You got to have a lot of confidence in yourself to do that. And it sounds like you've done it and you've done well at it. So my hat's certainly come off to you. So visual management, though, there's a million ways to start the lean journey. Right. And every lean practitioner, will give you a different way of doing it. Right. So how did you arrive there? So tell me what about visual management makes it the best way to get started?
Probably the headline is because we're human beings. That's why visual management works, because that's how we engage with the world around us. Primarily. Yes. So visual management works for human beings. Visual management is universal. So it doesn't rely on literacy or English as a first language or anything like that. It's simple, and it should be simple. it's easy. It's again easy to interpret. It's very easy to communicate, whether it's a color, whether it's a line, whether it's very simple wording, whatever it might be. Workplaces, I think again through my reading that a line that really stuck with me is the workplace should talk to you. It should speak to you.
That's powerful.
And
so if these walls could talk, I guess when you go visual management, the walls are literally talking to you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And my rule of thumb, my consultant hat says, when an idiot like me should be able to walk into a workplace and it should make sense. That's the benchmark. It's not dumbing things down. It's just simplifying and making the flow of communication and information very clear and very simple. To make the workplace user friendly. Far too often the information, the knowledge, the things that people need to know are held by a very small number of people. So visual management, I think, cuts through a lot of that stuff. I think Gwendolyn Galsworth's book, Visual Workplace, Visual Thinking, is really powerful. And there's a couple of lines in there which, what do I need to know? What do I need to share? And again, that's another, a line that sticks with me. It's just, those sort of simple things. So whether it's, 5S is a fantastic visual tool, whether it's standard work, whether it's, daily communication, those sorts of things, visual management boards, whatever it might be.
That's awesome.
They're all very, very simple, easy to do and easy to use tools that I think can take any organization a long way forward.
Yeah, no, that is incredible. And it's almost, I just listened to you talking, I'm just thinking about it in the context of my own experiences. It's almost taking your communication game up a few notches, right? Because, a lot of people, will say that their company needs to communicate better. But as soon as you go visual management, you got a decent system in place, automatically your communication reaches another plateau, right? Where, yes. Someone who wants the information can get it, and they don't even have to go to another person to try to pry it out. It's there for all to gain access to. So I got a question for you. I've done some work with visual management. I worked at Mars at one point at a Reno, Nevada facility, and it was my job to implement the visual management system. Right, we called it FMOS, Factory Mars Operating System, and I remember early on. Trying to get the system up in place and then get people to engage, right? This factory was trying to do this for like 3 years before I showed up. And then I remember the plant manager kind of after I was there for a few months, plant manager came up and said, how come this isn't in place yet? It should already be in place, right? In its entirety. I was like, whoa, okay, sure. So I dropped everything, right? And I started working on this, right? I got a bunch of whiteboards. I took like a hallway and said, we're gonna put 8 whiteboards up here, one for every department, right? Yeah. You guys tell me what metrics you're gonna track on these boards, what action items you're gonna track on these boards, and we're gonna design them, we're gonna put them up. So I spent, you know, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks taping, labeling, you know, ordering prints to get this thing up and running. And fortunately I had a supportive plant manager who helped me get everybody to the board to have the shift meetings and have the, you know, sort of the daily operations meeting and things like that. It took some time before we could get into a rhythm of having those candid conversations of, it's okay that things aren't perfect. We can accept that. When a number's in the red, it's not get emotional, get upset, get defensive. It's all right, let's commit to some action to get it where we want it to be, right?
Yeah.
That was a big culture shift, and it was some growing pains to get there. And I imagine you see that a lot in the work you do. So what have you learned to kind of help people process through that?
So yeah, it's a great question, and thank you for sharing that experience. It looks really easy and it looks really simple, but that's every day for me. Every single client, it's a challenge to implement this stuff. I mean, there's always a conversation around just the time it takes to have those meetings.
Right.
Okay, where are we going to find 10 or 15 minutes every day to do this?
Exactly. That's the first big hurdle, right?
Yeah. Because we've got to get production out the door, and hang on, that's an hour a week we're going to spend just standing there talking.
Exactly.
So there's that conversation. And then it's, you know, you start having these meetings and it's just crickets. It's a leader talking to a team who are not engaged.
It's amazing. Like, I think about the fact that I'm here in North America, you're in Australia, but my experience has been almost exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
doing this and getting this going. So yeah, keep going. Like, what's, you know, what else do you see, and what do you do to overcome?
Yeah, and again, Calvin, it's human beings.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
And so you have to, I think one of the most important things is just to read the environment, read the culture. So why are people disengaged to start with? It's, you know, there can be many reasons, but generally there's some sort of fear or uncertainty in the environment. There's a lack of trust. So it can be quite easy, and businesses get up and running really quickly with this. Sometimes it is really, really hard going. And I have to, you know, really push to make these things happen, particularly early on. It can be because, you know, maybe it's poor quality leadership, maybe there's legacy cultural issues in the environment. Again, lack of trust, all of those sort of things, just to even start to have people engage. So like you touched on before, the metrics that we talk to must be meaningful. They must be simply expressed and clear. And the team need to understand what they are, what they're talking to, and why they're talking to, why these things are important.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first part. So it's not just management banging up some, you know, lovely looking charts and let's talk to them. It's, you know, we have to consult with the team.
Right.
Like you said, you know, they have to have some stake and some input into that.
Yeah.
I'm not fussed on, you know, some companies have very little data. Some companies have lots of data, way too much data.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's always a question of what is the right amount, and then how do we best use that data and information? So even,
you know,
if it's,
another thing I've observed is people tend to want to use vanity metrics, right? We had this one metric of we went, you know, 300 and something days with no safety incidents, right? that was one of the ones that always killed me, ate me alive, because every day we read that number, we all sat there and celebrated. And there was never any action to improve safety at the company as a result. And it also created a situation where people dare not to report a safety issue. Right? People were probably getting hurt, but nobody wanted to touch that sacred number because that was a dopamine boost for everybody to be able to clap to that number every day. And nobody wanted to be the one to end that party. So how do you keep people out of that trap of, you know, vanity metrics, which in my opinion have a overall detrimental effect on real performance?
I guess my mantra is that the metrics aren't important. I'm not. So, you know, you can have that side of it. Typically, you know, in the lean world, we're using red and green, so it can become an exercise in chasing the number. So, you know, no different to a normal type environment where all we're doing is chasing, you know, an end goal, a number every day. And I'm not interested in that. And I see a lot of people who are thinking they're practicing lean, but they'll shortcut everything. Same sort of thing with the safety number. They're chasing the green number. They'll manipulate things to get a green. They'll change, standard settings and things to subvert that, or they take shortcuts or whatever. Right. So I'm always an advocate of the measures drive the behavior.
They do.
So what I tend to do is I approach the metrics as, so the red to green, it's not good or bad. We can't think of it in that way. The visual metrics are an indicator of the health of the process. So they're just telling us what's working well, what's not working, and then the conversation has to be balanced around that. So
there you go.
Again, where we have inconsistent performance, where it's, you know, green, red, red, green, red, green, you know, it's okay. We need to understand, and we need to talk about the green just as much as we do the red.
Yeah.
So why is it green? Do we even understand why we had a successful day? What are the things that underpin that? Or was it just, you know, it wasn't just luck. We did things that contributed to that result. And there you go. It's very important that we capture those and we standardize those and we keep and we try to do more of those things.
Yeah. You know, when I think about red and green and visual management boards and visual management systems like that, and trust me, I've seen, this is a whole nother conversation, but I've seen plants that have red, green, and gold, right? It's like, we are so good that we're at gold status, right? That's to me, that's when it gets to a point of like, this is not even a productive conversation anymore, right? But when I think of red and green, you know, day to day, hour to hour, whatever it is you're tracking, I think it drives a great culture of reparative Kaizen. Like it's calling, it's speaking to, obviously the red is by design jumps out at you, right? This is broken. It needs to be fixed, or something went wrong. It needs to be addressed. So, and the way I've done it in the past is said, hey, if there's a red up here, I should see a follow-up action to, you know, try to address it or, you know, repair it or something like that.
Yeah.
I think there's another side of the continuous improvement coin though, that's more, you know, moving the company toward a desired future state. Yeah. Right. So there's reparative on the left hand, and on the right hand, it's let's traverse a journey toward the North Star, right? Let's become better and in the create more value in the world, or, you know, something like that. So, how do you know, what are some things you've seen from a visual management standpoint that helps to drive that type of Kaizen improvement? Yeah. Like, you know, performance improvement Kaizen, I guess.
Yeah. So maybe just want to step back a little bit, Calvin. So just with the metrics, so like I said, the red and green conversation, but ultimately I think like any lean tool should be visual. It should be simple, but it should drive a conversation. So, yeah. You know, obviously a daily visual management board is designed to drive a conversation.
Yeah, good.
And like we said, all too often, those meetings don't drive a conversation, or they don't drive the right conversation. So the important part for me out of those meetings is, like you said, there's documented follow-up activity, whether that's corrective action, whether that's improvement action, whatever it might be, that there right. is something documented out of there. The metrics are designed to drive the conversation.
Right.
That's it. And that's so, again, I'm not, the metrics are great, but the most important part is that, you know, improvement activity or whatever, you choose to term that part of the board. In terms of the proactive stuff, so then, you know, through your metrics, you're probably going to be looking at trends over time. You might be utilizing then, you know, you might be using A3. You might start using Improvement Kata. You know, again, part of, you know, what I do is my job is to build structure. And so sometimes that starting point can be different. So sometimes it can be lower level, just tier one shop floor meetings. Sometimes it can be somewhere in the middle. Sometimes it can be more of a strategic piece of work first, depending on the needs of the business. But that, I guess those, you know, if we're looking at those day-to-day metrics, they have to link to an overall goal, whether that's the next 12 months, whether that's the next 3 to 5 years, whatever it is, that
there you go.
Everyone has to be aligned with that overall strategic goal. We have to know that part. So the next layer for me is generally, you know, again, whether it's an A3, whether it's improvement card or on targeted activity, I'll link that, I guess, the day-to-day, week-to-week type stuff to then a 90-day plan, which there will be a chunk of the strategic plan.
That's what I was just about to go there. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah.
And so that, you know, we're getting into Hoshin Kanri and ensuring that we're cascading the strategic stuff down to a granular level day to day, that people understand the mission, people understand their part of the mission and why these things are important. And I think then that starts to drive the, you know, we've got the day to day stuff, but then there's a layer of proactive, the things that are propelling us forward, and we have to, I guess it comes, you know, another conversation now around time. We have to make time to do those things.
That's absolutely right. And it's an investment, right? It's a, you know, it's not a, you know, set something in place and expect good things to happen. It's no, you have to invest, almost like you invest money in your 401k, right? Out of every paycheck, you know, some percentage comes out and gets invested in those funds. Continuous improvement is the same way, right? Out of every day, you got to carve out a chunk of your time and invest it in what I call the future of the business, right? You got to make time today to create the future that you want. And it's almost like continuous improvement is a way to create time for yourself in the future.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. I mean, and that applies especially for people who say they don't have time for continuous improvement. Right.
Oh, and the people that say that most of the time are leaders. They're senior leaders
or
business owners. And yeah, we don't have time, and we want a return on this immediately.
Right.
And you know, we're doing lean now, so yeah, everything should be better.
Yeah, exactly. we're lean now, right? I put up the board. I'm lean now. Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way. It is like you say, it is an investment, and it takes time to build, you know, to build the capability. Again, we're dealing in change. We're dealing in plasticity. We're dealing in neuroplasticity. We're dealing in organizational plasticity, and that takes time. That takes practice. That takes
repetition. Rewiring neural connections, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I submitted a post on LinkedIn not long ago that said that a lot of companies' continuous improvement initiatives are suffering from something called transplant shock, right? it's the idea that you're going to uproot a beautiful tree that grew in Toyota, and you're going to plant it in your own company and expect it to flourish, almost like branch for branch. You're just copying, right? Well, a lot of trees that get transplanted that way end up dying. and a lot of continuous improvement initiatives die in the same way. And so the concept there was that, you know, instead of trying to take the entire tree, just take the seed, right? The seed is designed to transplant. The seed is designed to sort of float off into a different environment and start and germinate and grow into its own beautiful tree that's custom made for that environment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the reasons that trees do not survive transplant shock is because all of the micro roots never reconnect, right? Mm-hmm. They get severed when you sort of pull it out of its home environment, and they don't reconnect in the new environment. If you think about continuous improvement in that way, where you know you're sort of copying the Toyota production system. You're leaving all those micro roots behind, and those micro roots exist in the brains and the minds of the people that work there. Yeah. Right.
No, exactly right. And that's why, you know, Mike Rother's work and Toyota Kato is really important. Sends that message very, very clearly. Because yeah, I don't know what the percentage would be, but at least half, I would say, of continuous improvement initiatives fail, if not more.
Yeah, I would bet more, actually.
Yeah. And because of that, and because of, you know, probably our community, is that, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are just cookie cuttering, you know, whether it's TPS or whatever, into other organizations, and it just doesn't work. And like you said, it's the seed, it's the way of thinking, and applying that to, you know, a different and you know, a unique environment. You can't just pick up what's worked for one company, one person, whatever,
just,
and expect
just drop that it to in. Work. But you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, the failure rate is high. You know, it's a lot higher than we would like it to be. Hmm. But honestly, you know, as I mature, I realize that that's not such a bad thing, right? I think it's great that companies try. I think it's great that they tried. It's only a bad thing if they don't learn from the failure.
Mm.
You know, if you experience that failure and you suffer from it, but you don't learn what you were supposed to learn, like you were supposed to fail, right? That needed to happen.
Yeah.
Something you thought was true, you learn, you know, you now know that it was not true, but if you don't reflect on it and take away the learning from that experience, then it was a total loss, right? But I think if you do learn, then you got a greater chance of being successful the next time you try. So you should try again and try again and try again and keep learning and keep trying until you get it right. I think that is the continuous improvement process, you know, at its core.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes, I mean, at the end of the day, this is hard.
It is.
No one's saying this is easy. And I think, you know, we might sell it like, oh, it's simple and it's easy and it's going to deliver all these wonderful things, but it's hard. Like anything you want to achieve in any walk of life, it there's an investment there. It's going to take time. It's going to take practice. There's going to be many, many backward steps and failures, but that's okay. That's all part of the
journey.
And I simply think sometimes people aren't prepared to do the hard things. The other thing is that lean is exposure. And sometimes that bright light can be really confronting.
It can.
I had a conversation with a fellow consultant recently, and he said to me, he said, "Oh, no one wants to hear their baby's ugly." And I love that because that's true. And whether that's just from an organization point of view, I think, you know, a lot of my work, yes, I do lean stuff, but there's a lot that surrounds that in terms of being a holistic approach to change and transformation. And
yeah,
a lot of my time is spent coaching leaders, and a lean approach is so confronting for many leaders. I'd say most leaders will have some sort of extreme discomfort around certain things. And that is a journey that takes, you know, a lot of nurturing and
it does patience, persistence, all these soft things that we tend not to include on the the lean brochure, right?
Exactly. And, yeah. And that, and ultimately the success hangs on that too.
It does. You know, I've recently started using an expression. I don't know if it's, you know, I'm still challenging whether how valid it is, but it's the concept of winners and losers, you know, and this really applies to leaders. Like, a winner is someone who, no matter what tools you give them, they're going to find a way to win. No matter what roadblocks or adversity is in their way, they're going to find a way to win. That's what makes them winners. Yep. But on the other hand, a loser is someone who, no matter what you give them, they're going to find a way to lose. So,
yeah.
So, you know, from a lean standpoint, it's like, hey, you know, Michael Jordan is probably going to win no matter what tennis shoes he's wearing. But if you give him some really nice Air Jordan tennis shoes, it makes the process more pleasant for him. Right. Mm-hmm. But he was going to win anyway. Right. With some Chuck Taylors or Pro Wings on, he's going to find a way. Cause that's just who he is, right, inside him. But you know, on the other hand, you can give the loser the best shoes, the best tools, whatever it is out there, and they're going to find a way to not win. They're going to blame somebody else. They're going to, you know, do the things that, you know, losers tend to do. I hate to frame it that way, because I don't like calling people losers. I don't like thinking that it's so personal. But, you know, more and more I'm realizing, yeah, it kind of is. You kind of got to have it in your mind and your heart that you're going to win, and you're going to find, you're going to stick with it until you do.
Yeah, absolutely. A phrase that came to me was, you know, there's always a way, and just thinking like that. So, you know, to your point, I think there's a lot of this comes down to mindset. A lot of it comes down to environmental conditions. And I always say, when you know better, you do better.
I think so too. Absolutely.
And simply, there are many people out there who are, you know, with all due respect, are ignorant. They don't know any better. They haven't seen any better. Right. Therefore, you know, maybe their acceptance is that this is as good as it gets.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You don't know what good really looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's part of it. And then I guess that winners and losers things, well, when you do know what good looks like, then are you prepared to go on that journey
and go get it?
I think that's where the, you know, success or failure lies.
Yeah. That's powerful, man. Paul, I so enjoy speaking with you, and your thoughts and your ideas are so profound. I could go on and on and on. I'm supposed to try to keep this to a 30-minute episode, but you're not going to make that easy for me to do, are you? So let's do this. Let's do lightning round. Let's close it out. Let's tell people how they can get a hold of you, and then let's get up out of here. So first question for you, what are you working on right now?
I'm not working on anything in particular right now. I'm just doing the day to day. So business is good. So I've got a list of great clients. So some of them starting, some of them you know, midway, some of them probably, you know, really standing up on their own, which is great. So just sort of doing the day to day stuff. So nothing in particular. Some things off on the horizon, but at the moment just enjoying doing the day to day.
That's fantastic. And getting better every day at it, I imagine.
Exactly. trying to.
All right. Excellent. What are you excited about for the future?
I'm excited about just continuing my journey and continuing to learn. So, I'm someone who really wants to practice what they preach. I really try and have a beginner's or a learner's mindset every day when I walk into my clients. I say, well, hey, I'm going to learn way more from you than you will from me. I'm excited. Like I'm excited, you know, just the things that, you know, the innovation and the creativity that I see each and every day, excites me. So, I guess looking forward to more of that, seeing it and learning, myself.
That's incredible, man. There's like a big thing, right? If you love the process, you're not so worried about results. I mean, the results will come, but if you just love the process, then you got something that can sustain, right?
Yes.
If you don't love the process, you know, it's just torture, right? The whole thing is torture. It's like, I hope I never have to do this again. But yeah, first learn to love the process. And it sounds like you found that, right? You found, you know, maybe you didn't have to find it, but you certainly are there now. So that's great. All right. So what book are you reading now? And what would you recommend that we take a listen to? You mentioned Gemba Kaizen. I think you mentioned another interesting book. What would you recommend we take a read to?
Yeah, interesting. So I'm reading The Black Swan at the minute.
Okay.
By Nassim Nicholas Taleb, which is quite an interesting book.
Is that the one the ballet is created on?
No.
Okay. No. All right. My daughter's getting into ballet now. She's got me like getting into it a little bit. But yeah, go ahead though.
Yeah. So no, I'm enjoying that. Look, I'm an active reader, so that's part of my daily discipline. Is I try and read at least 10 pages of a book every single day.
That is fantastic. Wow. Good for you.
So on that, I don't tend to read lean books these days. I read those books that are lean books, but not lean books, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so
right.
I would recommend. So I've heard you on Patrick's podcast talk about habits, so the power of habits. So Atomic Habits is one that sticks out for me.
That's a great one.
Yeah. I've also recently read, and I don't know why I hadn't read it sooner, but Extreme Ownership by
Jocko Willink. Yeah, that's another great one. That's on my list, but I got a great friend of mine, Troy Magruder at World Technology Ingredients, who's a big Jocko Willink fan, and he says, "Yeah, that one needs to move up in the on the reading list." That's a good one.
I would second that. That's probably one of the best leadership books I've read. It's a
really great read. That's incredible. Yeah. Good. Okay.
So there's a couple. I'm waiting on Mark Graban's Measures of Success. That's coming in the mail. So I'm looking forward to reading that as
well. Yeah, that's another one that's on my list too. That one and a couple other ones. Katie Anderson. I do want to read Patrick Adams's book. And a few more. Do you have plans on writing a book sometime?
People keep asking me that. maybe. Okay. I'm not going to commit to that because it's a big commitment that scares me a bit.
Well, you got enough content out there to kind of polish that up into a book. Just, you know, throw a title and a cover, some cover art on it. But, you know, you may not be far from it already.
Oh, there's you're right. There's a few years worth there. So, yeah, perhaps.
Yeah. All right. Good. Good. Well, let me know if you do. You got one customer already. All right. So let's do this. Let's make it official. Let's close it out. How can people get a hold of Paul if they want to learn more, get more involved in what you're doing, or just follow on with you as you go in your journey?
Just connect with me on LinkedIn is really the best way to go. I will, you know, if you message me, I will return your message. So yeah, happy to do that. That's a regular thing for me. So yeah, definitely LinkedIn is the best way. You can check out my website. So www.dunlopconsultants.com.au. You can have a look at some of the other things that I do. So I do some perhaps non-lean type stuff like the Lego Serious Play. So check that out. But definitely LinkedIn.
Excellent. So just to kind of add to that, that's Paul Dunlop, D-U-N-L-O-P. Yeah, yep. He's on LinkedIn. So he's everywhere on LinkedIn. So if you just go in and do a quick search, you can't miss him. If he's not your first connection, I promise he's second connection. You know, there's no third connection for Paul Dunlop. It's only first to second. So, great, man. I'm glad we got a chance to catch up. This has been great. Certainly want to continue talking and maybe have you on soon. Come back again and do another episode and share what you're learning, what you've learned since then. And, let's do this again sometime.
No, fantastic. Thank you, Calvin. Really appreciate that. And I've loved the conversation.
Absolutely. Pleasure's all mine, Paul. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye. All right.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much for joining us today. This episode was brought to you by the good folks at Improver Technologies. If you like the show, you can find more just like it at improver.com. That's improver.com, where you can learn more, do more, teach more, and transform your world. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.